Thank you, Mr. Morrison. Boy, that sounds strange, doesn't it? Thank you, Mr. Morrison. He told me before his service has been 7 years since he's led singing. Here. He did in the Dells, but not here. I couldn't help but thinking as I was singing the first hymn, that's the same amount of time that Nebuchadnezzar was eating grass. But you know, at the end of 7 years, Nebuchadnezzar's throne was restored to him and his kingdom was restored. So that may be what's happened here. Okay, well, you know, we've all lived our lives on the face of the earth. And although that may sound like a not too profound statement, I'm going to be repeating it two or three times as we go along. In so doing, we're aware of a lot of things. I mean, we know stuff. You know, we see, for example, we see trees, we see grass. We see dogs, we see cats, we see cars, we see houses. These things, we know, are the way that it is. I mean, they are there. We know it because we can see them. There are some things that we don't see, but we know that they're there. How many got up this morning and thought about the air? Probably not too many, huh? But we need air, don't we? We need air to live. Air made up of three things mainly, nitrogen, hydrogen, oxygen, and we have to have oxygen to live. I read somewhere once that if the oxygen were 0.2% more than it is in the air, something like that, that fires would be breaking out in various locations. Somebody suggested that probably no one would smoke cigarettes because the cigarette would catch on fire when you try to smoke it. But we see trees, we see flowers. We know these things exist. We know that air exists because we can feel it as we breathe it in. We don't think about it. We can sense that things are around us. We know that they're there because we've been given five wonderful senses. Some people claim to have a sixth sense. They call it ESP. I have a seventh sense. I learned that sense. Okay? If I were going to go swimming, for example, and I saw a dorsal fin going through the water, I would sense that I don't want to go in there. If I were working in the backyard and I saw a tiger a block away, licking his lips and looking at me, I'd go in the house. That's my seventh sense. You know, a baby wouldn't be afraid of a tiger. Babies haven't learned that. So my seventh sense is something I've learned. A baby would be afraid of a loud noise. I wouldn't be afraid of a loud noise, but it might aggravate me. But I've learned things that I refer to as my seventh sense. Satan has the ability to confuse that seventh sense. There are things we should be afraid of that we aren't. We're just used to the way that things are. We've lived here all of our life, and we know that that's how they are. Oh, I know if we were picked up suddenly and placed down in the middle of Africa, there would be things that are different. We'd see different trees. We'd see giraffes instead of dogs and cats. Cats would be bigger where we were then and wouldn't be as many buildings, but we would gain an awareness then of what was around us, and we would say, okay, this is how it is here, and we'd know that that's how it is, that that's the way things are. We become so used to the way that things are that sometimes we're just sure that that's the way something is. Let's take a look at Mark 16. We're sure that that's the way that something is. I mean, I saw it. I know that that's the way it is. Mark 16, verse 11. Now, the setting here is after the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And Mark is describing how people didn't believe that this event took place. How could it? I mean, you know, I know what happens when something's dead. It's dead. I remember listening to the World Tomorrow broadcast years ago, and the presenter was talking about death. He says, you see an animal laying in the middle of the road, you know that's death. They've been run over. They won't be living anymore. Start in verse 11 of Mark 16. When they heard that he was alive and had been seen by her, they did not believe. After that, he appeared to another in another form to two of them as they walked and went into the country. And they went and told it to the rest, but they did not believe them either. Verse 14. Later he appeared to the 11. Okay, now we know who he's talking to. Who he appeared to. The 11 is the 12 disciples minus Judas Iscariot, right? He appeared to the 11 as they sat at the table, and he rebuked their unbelief and hardness of heart because they did not believe those who had seen him after he had risen. You know, we pick on Thomas. Thomas didn't believe. I'll believe it when I see it. My mother used to call me a doubting Thomas. I suppose she knew what that meant. I don't know. In essence, they all said, I'll believe it when I see it. None of them believed. Sometimes we believe something when our other senses are involved. For example, if you and I were driving down the road together and a skunk was walking along the side of the road and we didn't see him, I might say, we just passed a skunk. And you'd say, I know, I could smell him. Someone who is in the business of judging wine. Now, I'm not a wine connoisseur. Maybe you could talk to Mrs. Helwig. She's pretty good at that. But I know that there's more than one thing that you look at. You look first to see if there's any little chunks in it. They don't call it that. Then you see what it smells like, and they don't call it that. They call it the bouquet or something like that. But if you were to say to someone, this is the best wine that I've ever seen or ever tasted, then someone else might say, well, I'll believe that when I smell it. Because, you see, it has to have the right odor. Now, we have a lot of different tastes where music is concerned. Some people like country. Some people like easy listening, you know. Some people like classical. Some people like heavy metal. If you said, oh, it's the finest piece of music I ever listened to, they'd say, well, I'll believe that when I hear it. So our senses are involved. You know, our senses are very much involved with what we believe and why. God has given us five marvelous senses. And for the most part, we have a difficulty that we don't even realize we have, and that's that oftentimes we trust our senses 100% of the time. And oftentimes this is an understatement. The title today of this split sermon is Beyond the Senses. It can't be wrong, I saw it, you know? Sometimes we might see something incorrectly. I have a good friend. Many of you have the same friend down in Pontiac. His name is John Hunt Bay. He's been there 27 years, I think. A woman identified him, as I recall, from 50 feet in the dark. He's Asian. She was Anglo. But she was sure. Okay, so you make a mistake. You know, you hear something wrong. Maybe you smell something wrong. You see something wrong. Something feels, you think you recognize it. And your senses fool you a little bit. But what about a whole world that we can't see? 2 Kings, the 6th chapter. What about a whole world that's around us that we can't see? We can't. That couldn't be because, of course, I can't see it. I can't hear it. I can't smell it. I can't touch it. In 2 Kings 6, Mr. Morrison talked about this a couple weeks ago, or three or four. The Syrian army was surrounding the city because they wanted to get a hold of Elisha. 2 Kings 6, the 15th verse. And his servant was quite frightened by what he saw. Verse 15 of 2 Kings 6. When the servant of the man of God arose early and went out, there was an army surrounding the city with horses and chariots. And his servant said to him, Alas, my master, what shall we do? Alas, what shall we do? So he answered, he said, Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. And Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see. Then the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Now the men in the Syrian army couldn't see this. Actually, they couldn't see anything because they were struck with blindness and treated very kindly. They were fed a nice meal and everything like that. But the point is this. Let's just pretend that instead of showing this to the young man, Elisha just walked out and said, You know, you guys, you're here and you're real tough and everything, but this whole mountain is covered with chariots of fire driven by angels, and all it would take would be one of them. What do you think they'd have said? You're nuts. You're nuts. I'll believe it when I see it, you know? Mr. Armstrong used the analogy of radio waves, you know? Radio waves go through the air, that stuff that we don't pay any attention to. Back in the day that he was broadcasting on the radio, he had radios with little tubes that had to warm up. The radio waves float around, we don't see them, same with television waves, we don't see them, we don't hear them, we don't taste them, unless they go into this little box. And then something happens in there, and they come out like words. You can hear them. You can hear what somebody said from a great distance. Mr. Armstrong suggested that that's how the demonic forces approach us today. Let's turn to Romans, the 8th chapter. They're out there, but we can't feel them, can't see them, can't smell them, can't taste them. How strong is the force that leads human beings to their behavior? How strong is that force? The creation today, brethren, is enslaved. The people are enslaved, but they don't know it. This enslavement includes them, but they don't know it. We've lived on the face of the earth all of our life. We're used to it. Mr. Helwig mentioned it. It's always been that way. All of us were born in this age, and throughout this age, human beings have been enslaved, but they don't know it. Romans 8, verse 19. For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly awaits for the revealing of the sons of God. Plural. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. Because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. Ephesians 2. The people of the world don't know that they're enslaved. We know it. How strong is the force that leads them to their behavior? What's going on in the Middle East today? What's that about? How strong is this force that enslaves people? Satan has fooled the world into thinking that he doesn't exist. How strong is this force? How strong is this force that's here when we're here? Ephesians 2, verse 2. In which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit, who now works in the sons of disobedience. How powerful is that force? How powerful is that force? We're just used to it, you know? I mean, we have to be used to it. We've lived in it all our lives. Everybody's lived in it all our lives. That's the way it's got to be. We don't think of it as a force. We don't even know it's there. We do, because we've been taught. We've never known anything else. We can't see it. The world doesn't know it's there. It's like air, you know? Who thinks about air? Who thinks about radio waves? Nowadays, some of us, I suppose, could pull out our telephone out of our pocket and listen to radio waves. I know we can do it with television. I think, it's just my nickel's worth, that even though nobody can see this force, that sometimes you and I recognize it. Mr. Helwig talked about that. Something's going on here. Something's wrong, you know? I think that we kind of can get the drift when spiritual waves come at us, when we learn to recognize them. I'll mention this again a little bit later. Okay, let's move on. We're going to be resurrected at the seventh trump. We know that. Okay, let's look at that. 1 Corinthians 15. We will be resurrected when the seventh trumpet sounds. 1 Corinthians chapter 15. First Corinthians 15, we'll look at verse 51 and 2. It says, Behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. Okay, so we're resurrected at the seventh trumpet. But there is not peace on earth immediately after that. Let's turn to Revelation, the 16th chapter. what happens after we are resurrected and are in the air now, we're going to read about in Revelation 16. It's referred to as the seven bowls. Seven bowls. B-O-W-L-S. Bowls. Seven bowls. Okay, Revelation 16, verse 1. Let's take a look and see what happens here after we're in the air. Then I heard a loud voice. Revelation 16, verse 1. I heard a loud voice from the temple saying to the seven angels, go and pour out the bowls of the wrath of God on the earth. So the first went and poured out his bowl upon the earth, and a foul and loathsome sore came upon men who had the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. I don't know what that sore is. Some have speculated that this perhaps burns from radiation. It might be boils. I got a hunch it's a pretty severe sore, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's more than one sore. Okay, verse 3. The second angel poured out his bowl on the sea, and it became as the blood of a dead man, and every living creature in the sea dies. Now consider that. How much life is there in the ocean? All those schools of fish, they're all dead. The ocean is made out of blood now. How about the whales? How big are whales? They're all dead. Squids, octopuses, starfish, clams, sea urchins, cucumbers, all this stuff is dead. Verse 4, the third angel poured out his bowl on the rivers and springs of water, and they became blood. Okay, what that says is these people who are now with loathsome sores don't have any water. They're going to get dehydrated, right? And I heard an angel of the waters saying, you are righteous, O Lord, the one who is and was and who is to be, because you have judged these things. You know, God, this might seem severe what's going on, but God is never early. God is never late. God is always perfect. And that includes his judgments. For they've shed the blood of the saints and the prophets, and you've given them blood to drink. It's their just due. And I heard another saying from the altar, even so, Lord God Almighty, true and righteous are your judgments. Verse 8, then the fourth angel poured out his bowl on the sun, and power was given to him to scorch men with fire. And men were scorched with great heat, and they blasphemed the name of God who has the power over these plagues. They did not repent and give him glory. You know, get those Ten Commandments out from in front of the courthouse, because I don't want anybody telling me what to do. And on top of that, God doesn't exist anyway. But when they get in trouble, what do? They blaspheme God. I find that very, very interesting. Okay, these people are hurting. They're burned. They're getting dehydrated. I don't think there's an awful lot to eat at this point. Verse 10. Then the fifth angel poured out his bowl on the throne of the beast, and his kingdom became full of darkness. They gnawed their tongues because of pain. Did you ever bite your tongue? Did you ever bite your tongue while you're eating? You know, you're munching your sandwich, munch, munch, and all of a sudden, clomp, you clomp down the side of your tongue, you stop just from biting your tongue. These people have enormous sores all over them. They are dehydrated, they haven't got anything to eat, and they're burned, probably blistered, I suspect, and now they're gnawing. They're literally gnawing on their tongues because it hurts so bad. Verse 11, they blasphemed the God of heaven because of their pains and sores and didn't repent of their deeds. Verse 12, the sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river Euphrates, and its water was dried up so that the way of the kings from the east might be prepared. What's that about? Well, they have to dry up the river so that these men can march across the river. How long does all this stuff take? We're up in the air, by the way. How long does all this stuff take? I don't know the answer to that. But I know this. You go back to the spring of the year and you got Passover. The people come to the Red Sea, right? And God spreads the waters and the ground is dry and they walk across. Now, I don't know how long that talk takes. You can ask Mr. Scott Johnson about that later. He had it all figured out once. He had it figured out. They went 2x2, 4x4, 8x8. I think he concluded that if they were about a mile wide, it would take about 8 hours for them to get across. You can check with him on that later. But here, you got to realize in the spring of the year, you got Passover. They come to the Red Sea, and they get across, and it's the night to be observed. It's the very next day. You got 9 days between trumpets and atonement. So I don't think this is happening real fast. I just got a hunch. So the people who are hurting and hurting for a long time, and they're cursing God. Verse 13, I saw three unclean spirits like frogs coming out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophets. For they are the spirits of demons, performing signs which go out to kings of the earth and of the whole world to gather them to the great battle the battle of the great day of God Almighty. Verse 15, Behold, I'm coming as a thief. Blessed is he who watches and keeps his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame. Now, why in the world would he say that? I mean, we're already in the air. Why is he going to say a thing like that? Verse 16, now we know who that is from verse 14, that's the spirits of demons, gather them together to the place called in Hebrew Armageddon. How powerful is this force that enslaves the world? How powerful is this thing that we just have always been kind of used to? It's just the way it is, right? Verse 17, the seventh angel poured out his bowl in the air, and a loud voice came out of the temple of heaven from the throne saying, It is done. Okay. Let's look at Revelation 6, verse 15. You know, years ago there was a singer, his name was Tom T. Hall. Some of you probably remember him. He was a country singer. And he sang a song, and I don't remember what the name of the song was, but I'll never forget the line that I'm going to repeat to you. I'll never forget this line because I spent a lot of time in my youth working in restaurants. And I'd watch people come in and sit down at the bar. And you'd have a doctor sitting over here. You had a lawyer sitting over here. Quite frankly, this is true. I've watched it happen. We had a guy that was homeless. He used to sit at the end of the bar with his little plastic bag with all his goats. No, that's Leviticus. That's Leviticus 16. That's what we'll hear about this Wednesday. All of his world's goods in a grocery bag. And he'd sit there at the end of the bar hoping someone would buy him a beer. There'd be a guy come in at work driving a bus. I mean, every walk of life. And what Tom T. Hall sang was, The great equalizer is a big drink of liquor when they all belly up to the bar. And you know, it really was true. You had the doctor here, you had the lawyer here, you had the homeless guy here, and everybody was different until about two or three drinks got into them, and all of a sudden they were all just blah, 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 the same. Okay, Revelation 6, verse 15. The kings of the earth, the great men. Revelation 6, 15. The rich men, the commanders, the mighty men, every slave, every free man hid themselves in the caves and the rocks and the mountains and said to the mountains and rocks, Fall on us and hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne from the wrath of the Lamb. That's the great equalizer. This is going to happen and it's hurting these people big time. Remember I said I think sometimes we can feel the spiritual pressure that's out there even though we can't see it. Let's turn back to Revelation 20. I want to tell you a story. When I was a little boy, I'm almost certain I was in the second grade, and I say I'm almost certain because I'm not sure. I might have been in the first grade, but second grade rings a bell with me. There was one kid, he was really mean. I mean, he was just downright mean. He would punch kids, and he'd kick them, and I mean, he was always doing this stuff. Nobody wanted to be near this kid. One day, he wasn't there anymore. Everybody breathed a sigh of relief. Oh, good, that guy's bad. We don't want him around here. And he didn't come back for a long time. It was about 2 months. And all of a sudden, one day, he was back in school. He wasn't the same kid. He was very quiet. He was to himself. He didn't talk unless he was called upon. And he wasn't mean. He walked around. He'd go to his locker. He'd go where he was going to go. And he'd do what he was going to do. Nobody would talk to him because they knew what he was like, right? One day he was sick, home from school, probably had a cold or something. So the teacher explained to us that this boy had been operated on and a large tumor had been taken out of his brain. The tumor that had pushed in his brain pushed on nerves to the extent and the point that in essence what he had was a full-time, 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week migraine headache. He didn't know that. He had always lived that way. Just like we've always lived this way. They took the tumor out of his head, and he didn't know that that's what the rest of us were living like. He didn't know that. Revelation 20, verse 1. Pastor Helwig read this earlier. I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. He laid hold of the dragon, that serpent of old, who was the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. He cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal on him so that he should deceive the nations no more till 1,000 years were finished. But after these things, he must be released for a little while. Isaiah 14:6, please. Suddenly, the way it's been is changed. Just like that. The way it's been is changed. We read in Philippians 4:7. But the peace of God passes understanding. It's always been this way. I know it is. I see it every day. I hear it. I smell it. I know what it's like around here. Suddenly, the way it's always been has changed. What's different? Isaiah 14, verse 6. He who struck the people in wrath with a continual stroke, who ruled the nations in anger, is persecuted, and no one hinders. The whole earth is at rest and quiet. They break forth into singing. Wait a minute. These are the people who are gnawing their tongues, isn't it true? These are people who are begging the rocks to fall on them. These are the people who are in such pain that you and I can't imagine it. And they break into singing. What's different? Something's different than the way it's always been. You ever been in great pain? Is there a woman in this room who's given birth to a child? Do you feel like singing? Is there a man here who's had a kidney stone? I know there's a number of you. Do you feel like breaking into singing while all this is taking place? Yeah, I know there's one woman who's done both. These people are begging the rocks to fall on them. There's no pressure all of a sudden. I'll believe there's pressure when I see it. I'll believe it when my senses detect it. These people have been terrorized, tortured, they're covered with sores, they're burned, they're hungry, they're dehydrated, and they're breaking into singing? What's been removed from their existence that would cause them to break into singing? Verse 6 simply says, continual stroke of wrath has been removed. There's nothing they could sense. There's nothing they could see, hear, feel, touch, taste. But when it was removed, they broke into singing. At this time, all men will be able to begin to walk with God. I'd like to turn to Revelation chapter 20, verse 7. At the end of the 1,000 years, Satan's going to be released a little while, and the number who will choose to follow him are like the sands of the sea. You know, when I was in Redding, California once at the feast, the minister stood up on the last great day and he said, these are the people who are sitting on the fence. Well, maybe that's true. Revelation 20, verse 7. When the 1,000 years have expired, Satan will be released from his prison. He'll go out to deceive the nations which are at the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, whose number is as the sands of the sea. These people have the best teachers that anyone would ever have available. No teacher they will have will ever misinterpret a scripture or get it wrong or forget it. They're going to have the Bible. They're going to have these very verses that we just read available to them. And yet, for some reason, a number so big as the sands of the sea is going to follow this individual. Is it possible, do you think it's possible, that these people for all of their life, these people at the end of the 1,000 years, do you think it's possible they've never ever in their life been lied to? You think that's possible? And all of a sudden, the father of all lies, the greatest deceiver, the one who knows best how to divide people, how to destroy and how to deceive, doesn't let him know he exists, even though they've got these verses available to him. He just goes about it like it's always been for us. We've never experienced that age to come, but you know what? Those people never experienced this age. They never experienced that pressure. They've only experienced the peace of God that passes understanding. Don't turn there for lack of time, but Matthew 25, verse 1 says, the kingdom of heaven shall be like unto 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. While the bridegroom was delayed, it says in verse 5, they all slumbered and slept. I've mentioned that before. They all slumbered and slept. Now, there's more to that story, but that's not what we're talking about today. The point is this. All the virgins slept. Revelation 16, verse 15, we can look at that again. I asked a question when we read this before. Revelation 16, verse 15. It says, behold, I'm coming as a thief in the night. Blessed is he who watches and keeps his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame. Why would he ask that if we're already in the air? Well, the answer is simply this. It's a parenthetical reference to the church, as in reality the church is in the air at that time. It's an admonition to us today. And it's an admonition to the people at the end of the age also. In the years that I've been part of God's church, I've noticed this. I don't care if you've been in the church 50 years or if you're a young child. God gives us a number of tools that we have to stay close to him. I'll mention 5. You can come up with more. Prayer, Bible study, fasting, meditation, and fellowship with one another. We use those tools a lot, and we're going to be close to God, and we're going to be able to endure to the end. Any of us, no matter who we are, if we avoid those tools, we will grow distant from God, and He will grow distant from us. You know, over the years, the Day of Atonement has always been my favorite holy day. I know that sounds kind of dumb, but the fact of the matter is I always had a great feeling when I was done of inner victory. We're at one with God, you know, at one, A-T-O-N-E, atone. Brethren, I wish you all a victorious Day of Atonement.